it's so good to be back up here. We've missed you folks, so many dear friends. Thank you for keeping up with us, those of us that write us. And we're Facebook friends with a lot of you. Where would we be without Facebook? I don't know. You know, they say you got to look out for Facebook depression. You know, because everything that you post on Facebook is how radiant life is, right? And only the very best stuff. Isn't this a beautiful grandbaby, you know, kind of a thing. And so if life is not going that good for you right about then you could look through Facebook and just grow depressed. Because you'll think, my, how God is blessing everyone, me and thee, but sometimes not me. And so you've got to be really careful with those media platforms that you don't kind of think that, well, I'm Elijah and I'm sitting in a cave and no one is out there but me. And so you got to be a little bit careful. I'm not saying post anything bad about Facebook. You don't have to say, I had a really bad day today. But at the same time, keep in mind that life is sort of like a cake. You know, you've got the good parts and the bad parts. And if you've ever tasted nutmeg by itself, it's not so good, you know. Some of those spices that you put in there, just some flour. Oh, but when you start mixing in a little bit of butter and sugar and whole milk and all of that stuff, and you mix it together, life is worth the living. We're going to talk a little bit about just life today, and I want you to look at our focal passage up here. This is when Samuel met on the plains of Shiloh, and he met near Mizpah, and he raised an Ebenezer. We sang about it in that hymn. When I was just a boy, I used to sing, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. You know, here I raise mine Ebenezer. And it often didn't really ring a bell with me, and I kind of thought, what are we raising, an Ebenezer? We're going to talk a little bit about that today, and let the Lord speak to us through His Word in Samuel. There's actually a large group of scriptures around this passage, and I would be preaching it out of context to you to just say we're going to talk about the Ebenezer, because there's this marvelous story. I was reading it last night just to acquaint myself with some of the details to my wife. I read to her at night, and then when I hear her snoring, it's time to click off the light. And the party's over, you know. But she stays with it. If it's something interesting she's into, she'd listen to this whole thing. She said, why don't you read that whole story tomorrow? And I said, probably won't have time. That's about four chapters. Oh. Really, this story? Yeah. Somebody went, oh, no. Don't read four chapters to us. So I'm just going to tell the story, okay? It's a great story. But you have to know the story. What led up to the raising of the Ebenezer. And then I'm going to teach you how to lift up your own Ebenezer. And we're going to do it. I'm more professor in some ways than I am teacher. I've got a little exercise for you to do. So it's a good thing that I've got all this time. Wow. I even, when I was planning the worship, I thought I'll plan it kind of short because this is a little bit longer sermon. But I didn't realize I had total control. And so this is marvelous to have plenty of time, but I promise to have you out on time. I will do that for you. The story of Samuel, this is one of the first things that he did when he came out of his childhood and began preaching in all of Judah and in all of Israel. And this was a grave time for the Israelites. They were surrounded by their enemies. What's new? My wife and I visited the Holy Land. 4 years ago, something like that, 2015 or so. And we went all the way up in a bus, and we were on the Golan Heights. And the Israel tanks had their gun barrels sticking out every direction. I mean, that was, Israel itself is a fortress. You do know that. Surrounded by enemies. But I stood on the edge and heard boom, way out in the valley of Jezreel and out towards Syria. And I asked one of the young Israeli soldiers, what's happening? And he said, it's just more of Assad's bombs. And we watched those pillars of smoke go up and the bombing that was going on in Syria. And my heart broke. We were looking down at the hospital tents had been placed there by the Israelis to rescue the Syrians, and who had no place to go. All of their hospitals were being bombed. That's such a sad, sad situation. But I thought to myself, I remember when Assyria, all of that region, was a vital enemy of Israel. And I thought about the many enemies that had surrounded them, and they're still seemingly surrounded. In fact, as before our tour was over, we barely got out of the airport, the Ben Gurion airport in Tel Aviv, before the rockets' red glare started blowing in air, and they were under the attack once again. And I thought to myself, it's just a constancy, isn't it, that they're surrounded by enemies and foes. And I think we'll be until the day Jesus comes and liberates them entirely, and Armageddon is happening, and once again Israel's going to be taken off of the face of the earth. Well, that's happened many times. Nebuchadnezzar tried doing that. The Romans totally leveled that place under Titus and his troops in 70 AD. Israel, that tiny land, we just drove across it in minutes. And how can it be the focal point of the earth? Now, there it is. And in the last times, when it looks like once again, the armies are gathering from the north, maybe Russian, maybe Chinese, who knows where they'll all come from, and God will intervene and save his people. But in this time and day and age of which we're speaking at this verse, they were surrounded by enemies, and one of their most terrible enemies were the Philistines. The Philistines, all along the West Bank, that area probably even close to the word Palestine, Philistines, were some of those ancient arch enemies of Israel. In about the fourth chapter of 1 Samuel, you'll find that there's a major attack on that nation, and that they do not stand. In fact, as they go forth to fight, and they find themselves near Mizpah once again, and Shiloh, and some of those familiar territories. In fact, as this is on the plain of Ebenezer, it was pre-named that. Samuel didn't really name the place so much as he used the name of the place, Ebenezer. And they were attacked by the Philistines, and 30,000 foot soldiers lost their lives. 10,000 captives were taken away. Two of their major territories were lost. And the worst, they came in and took the Ark of the Covenant and ripped it out of the hands of the Hebrew nation that so loved the Ark. And they took it into captivity with them. And the news came back to Eli, who at that time was still a priest of the nation. He had two sons. Phinehas was one of the sons. And both of these boys had lost their lives in this battle. A messenger came back and told Eli, "We've lost the battle. Both of your sons are dead." And then Eli asked, "What of the ark?" And they said, "They've taken it. They've taken away the ark of God." One of the side stories here is that the wife of Phinehas was pregnant at the time with child. And Eli, when he heard that the ark was gone, fell over backwards and broke his neck, and he was dead. And so word came to her that she'd lost her whole family, both sons, her father-in-law, and said that she delivered the baby, died in that delivery, but before she died, she named the baby Ichabod. Ichabod means God has left this place. And in her mind, with the Ark of the Covenant gone, all of the leadership gone, God had abandoned Israel. Pretty dark moment, wouldn't you say? That's I used to read, one of my favorite novels was Charles Dickens' Tale of Two Cities. Ever read that? Or have you ever had to read that in high school? Right? Just one of those assigned readings. And he begins with the sentence, "These are the best of times. These are the worst of times." And I just think, what a definition of life that is. Probably not even of life in Israel at this time, but maybe even of our own lives. Some of you, as you're in this journey of life yourself. I don't know if you're in the best of times or the worst of times. It seemed like it was about 2 weeks ago that Loretta and I seemed like life imploded on us. I was having a fairly extensive root canal done. They were having to, I had an abscess beneath a crown. And so it was going to be a long, long afternoon in the dentist chair, you know, one of these practical oral surgery type things. And I just was there so long, I think I was overly intense. And after the procedure was over, quite successful, I told the dentist, I said, I think I've had a back spasm. And I had. And it was just the tension of holding on to the, and he had to do like 5 x-rays and see where he was. And it just took a long time. It went, started about 1 and I was through about 3:30 to 4. And so I got up out of the dentist chair and I went home. And gladly I had some pain pills because I did indeed have a back spasm. So I was in bed several days with a back spasm, could hardly move, with a fresh root canal. Meanwhile, my wife goes out to swing in a basket swing that I had installed for her on the rafters of the barn out near where we're living at our son's place. He has about four acres by the river in Absaroka. My middle son is staying in our cabin, and so we don't have the cabin. That's his home for all the way to Christmas. He's a furloughing missionary, and they have to have a place to stay. They have to come home every 3 years for about 6 months. And so anyway, she came in and went to bed and said, Mark, I fell. And I said, oh, what did you do? And she said, well, I was swinging in that, it's kind of a basket swing that's suspended, she said, and it just let loose. And she fell flat on her back, kind of on the side of a railroad tie that was buried in the ground. And I said, whoa, dear God, what have we done, you know? And so there she was lying beside me. And she had been waiting on me, and suddenly it was my turn to get up and kind of try to. She's often told me, if I ever get sick, I starve to death because you can't cook anything. And so, but I had a daughter-in-law this time and a son, so we were taken care of. But we think, boy, but for the grace of God, you know, we're here raising an Ebenezer today. Up to this point in my life, God has taken care of me. I can dare say He's done the same thing for you, or you wouldn't be here. Would you not? And so we all have that obligation to raise an Ebenezer occasionally in life and say, to this point in my life, God has brought me. And we can say that even today. It was not, as if you'll follow my story, if I haven't chased a rabbit too far, there was this time that at the same time that the Israelites were suffering under the captivity of the Philistines, the Philistines were having a horrible time themselves. God was seeing to that. And fact is, He brought upon them great plagues. He brought upon them tumors that they had all over their bodies. And then they had literally mice running in their fields, eating all of their crops. So they had these plagues upon them. It brought to their mind the story of the Israelites coming out of Egypt. And they said to themselves, we've got to do what the Egyptians did, because this same God is plaguing us. And so they decided, we've got to find a new home for this ark. They took it from, they've had 5 fortified cities, they took it to each city, and a new plague broke out in that city. So, you know, ding, idea, let's take the ark back. But we're going to have to do this in such a way to appease their God. And so they made little golden mice and little golden tumors. Put them in a little box, got an ox cart, got 2 milk cows put in front of the cart, and just sent it on the road back to Israel. And they said, if these milk cows go all the way, then we know the plagues were from God. If they turn right or left, or they get off on a detour, we'll think maybe it was a coincidence. So these milk cows faithfully made their way back to a field in Israel, where they rejoiced to see the ark had been returned. They took the cows, they sacrificed them as a burnt offering on the ox cart that they cut to pieces, and they all began to gather around this ox cart and where these cows had been, and began to rejoice. The ark of the covenant was back. And said, so at that moment they decided that they would follow God. The Israelites even became convinced that it was their God who was defending them. And so Samuel said, good, let's gather at Mizpah. I'm checking my wife for some of these names. She knows these Old Testament stories better than I do. And they were gathering there, and what were they doing? Confessing their sins. And he said, now what you've got to do is burn all these idols you've got. And it comes to the thought comes to mind, well, of course, they're slow learners. You know, that's why they've been in captivity. That's why they were always in captivity. It was their sinfulness. It was turning from God. That's why he always said, return to me and I will return to you. Always was his promise. That's his promise to you and me today. It's his promise to America. You'll return to me, I'll return to you. And no longer will Ichabod be written over your door. And God will return and he will make his house and his abode with us. Well, we know we live this side of the cross now. And in this age of the Holy Spirit in the church. And God doesn't necessarily abandon us. But there are times that he takes away some hedges of protection and some blessings. Because he wants to reach us again and return to us. And us to return to him. Well, they were having a national revival. Oh, I wish we could. But they were having a national revival. And the Philistines heard about it. They said, uh-oh. We better go attack once again. Slower learners. And so here they go, and they're coming over the hill, and the scouts of the Israelites come rushing to Samuel. They said, the Philistines are coming. They're going to destroy us again. And so he just begins to offer more offerings to the Lord, and the smoke rises higher, and the people chant, and they cry, and they sing, and said that when the Philistines came over the hill, I mean, this is the stuff movies have made, right? They came over the hill and said, God thundered them. Can you imagine? I don't know what that thunder sounded like a nuclear explosion. Who knows? When God thunders. I've been awful close to thunder sometime, hiking with my sons up in the Beartooths, and get up there in one of those mountain storms in the summer, and just the thunder and the lightning all happens at the same time. And you are looking for a rock to crawl under. Because it just shakes the ground. And I can imagine that, well, I guess this was a setup. The Philistines knew this is this God. This is it. So they just ran, and they were chased by the Israelites all the way out of their territories. They slew many of the Philistines that day, but they reclaimed all of their territories and said all of the rest of the days of Samuel, there was peace in Israel. Wow. God restored. Everything lost was restored. But in the midst of this, he called them back to Ebenezer. Now, Ebenezer was the place where they had lost the great war with Philistia. And he said, let's have a special service. And he began to stack rocks together. And he called this place Ebenezer. For it was a place of commemoration. God had been faithful. He is our help. He is our refuge. He is our rock of ages, cleft for me. I think to myself, and when I think of my own life, how many times I have been at that place, even on the cross, where you thought to yourself, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? I've been there. You've been there. Stood at a little 4 foot long graveside. My God, where are you? Watched my parents being buried. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? And yet the good and the bad of life makes up the Ebenezer. It's taking it all together. So I went to a conference one time, and we went through the making of a timeline to sort of see really what God had been doing in our life. And I'm going to lead you in a moment of reflection this morning, if you'll allow me to do that, and take you through a little exercise and turn this into a little bit more of a classroom, and turn this a little bit more into a podium or a teaching lectern than a pulpit. It looks more like that anyway, doesn't it, to me? And so we're going to lift up and kind of do a little bit of a lifeline together to look at the faithfulness of God. I'm going to give you some little cards, and I've invited my assistant, Vanna White. No, Loretta Langley, to help me. And I want you to take a little card like this, and you're going to draw the history of your life. You want to do this? Okay. Everybody's going. Okay. If you will, Loretta. If you don't have one of these, she's going to pass these out. Oh, great. Yay, we've got some help. I have 50 of these cards. We have extra pens if you don't have a pen. And I'm going to take you through the exercise of the drawing of an Ebenezer. And you're going to find that it's your Ebenezer. Belongs to you. It is God who has brought you to this place in your life. So, we'll take you through a little workshop. And what you want to do is you want to draw a line right across that card. Just right across the middle of the card. Okay? I'm going to let you show my timeline, okay? I drew that about, Monday of this last week. And what you're going to use, you know what little emoticons are? Emojis, what do you call those things? You know, emojis, emoticons. You know, they can be smiley faces, they can be little sunshines, they can be thumbs up, they can be lightning strikes, they can be dark clouds, they can be sunshine. All kinds of emoticons. You don't want to put any words on this. If anyone were to find your Ebenezer, they would not know it's you. It keeps it extremely anonymous. You may want to start. I started with the date of my birth. You didn't know I was that old, did you? Some of you are saying, I didn't know you're that young. But I'm really that old. And I just kind of drew, and I'm going to take you through. I want you, first of all, to put the good. And you can't put everything in your life, the very best things that happened to you in your life. Oh, the day you met and married, you know, you met your wife, your birth of your first child, you graduated from college, you got your job, you moved to Montana, right? Those good things. And you can make up little mountains and all kinds of emoticons and just go across and use the... Your death is over there, and your birth is unknown. I mean, your birth is over here. There, your death is unknown yet, unless you do know that. And so, all of the good things. And here's the reason we're doing the good things first. You're supposed to always remember the benefits of God. Those are the things He's asking you to remember. He said, "And forget not all of my benefits." In fact, as the Apostle Paul tells us, when you're asking for things in prayer, he said, I want you to always make your requests known to God. This is the fourth chapter of Galatians. Make your requests known to God with thanksgiving. And so with what we do first when we approach God and we honor Him is we thank Him for all the good times, right? All the good times. Had one of the men at my table when we did this. He said it was the day that my life was saved. And he showed himself. He had a good friend jump into a raging river, take his own life. I mean, put his own life instead. And he swam the river and grabbed his friend and pulled him to the shore. And so I said, he said, how do you put that into an emoticon? So I said, little waves and a hand. And he did. However, you can become creative here. Just have fun with this and just go all the way across there. And you may want to just list four or five things. Leave a little space because we're going to fill in. But the good things that have happened in your life. The things that are praiseworthy. Also in the fourth chapter of Philippians, the Apostle Paul says, think of the lovely things. The things that are praiseworthy, that are of good report. These are the things you'd put on Facebook, right? Something great happened to me. Or you'll be holding a cup of coffee, say, look at my view here this morning. Of course, it might be a little white today. But whatever your view is, I'm going to give you a few moments and just go across there. And you can make up little hearts. For we had three children, and I put them as little balloons floating ahead, my three little boys. Whatever you want to do, and I'm going to go through my timeline in a moment, and I wish I could hear every one of yours. There's not one that's the same in this room. Not one Ebenezer will represent another. And you just keep writing for a moment. Fill in a few little cartoon characters. You can use stick figures. You don't have to be an artist. Are you there? The day of your marriage can be just like a big heart. And I guarantee you that I'm not the artist in our family. My wife is. Mine all went into music. Hers went into crafts and art and design. And she can embroider prettier than I can draw. Just not fair. Okay. Have we about got it? And I'll leave you. You can take this home and embellish it all you'd like. Okay, now, we want to come back, and just like the Israelites were having good times and bad times, there have been some very painful trials in every life. And I'm not a prophet on the wall, I just know that. I just know that. I've never known anybody that lived the Pollyanna life of never anything bad happening. So I want you to go back through now and sprinkle some reality into your cake. Some nutmeg and vinegar and some of those foul-tasting things. I imagine the yeast doesn't taste very good right out of the sack. But yeast in the bread, my, what it does. So some difficult times, some losses, death, divorce, disease, those difficult loss of employment, all of those things that are sprinkled over our lives, the difficult times. You'll notice that I used kind of some little clouds and lightning strikes. I used a little gravestone. It doesn't look like that. Sprinkle in the reality. These are the best of times. These are the worst of times. Life. Hopefully you'll have fewer of these than you do of the blessings and the benefits. That's no guarantee, is it? None at all. Some of us have lived a trial by fire through our lives. And these are the bad things that happen, whether they're God-ordained or something that we have done. They're there nonetheless. Okay, let you finish up and let me take you through my little timeline. Can I do that? Born in 1946, I put a little sunshine over my childhood, an idyllic childhood. Born into a wonderful Christian home in Lubbock, Texas. My parents were stalwarts in the Baptist church there, and I was raised having to get to play with friends, two siblings, friends surrounding me. And so just idyllic. In 1956, I put a date there because I'll never forget it. I met Christ at the cross. Now, I'd been raised memorizing scripture and going to vacation Bible school, taking piano lessons from the church organist. But it just happened there was a revival service, and the evangelist was preaching on a Sunday night. And I just, for some strange reason, suddenly felt lost. because I had never confessed my sins before men. And that's what he was preaching on. If you'll not confess before brothers and brethren, I'll not confess you before my Father in heaven. And he preached on secret disciples, those who think that they can serve God and keep secret their testimony. And it just convicted me. And I'll never forget bursting into tears, a little 7-year-old, nearly 8-year-old boy, going forward and giving my life to Christ. I was so ashamed that I thought he was ashamed of me because I had not expressed myself publicly. And I was so shy. You don't understand how shy I was. We had a cherry tree in the backyard, and I hid in that tree. And there were some people on our block that asked my parents several times, "Now, do you all have just 2 children? I said, "No, we've got 3. And they had never even seen me. I was shy, painfully shy. It's a miracle of God that I'm up here before you this morning. You don't understand. It's a miracle of God. Here I raise mine Ebenezer. Hither by thy help I'm come." So he overcame that personality and used me to minister to crowds like I'm doing this morning. Then some music in there. I took a lot of piano lessons. I got very serious about a career in music. Went off to college and majored in music, a bachelor's degree in music, in voice, and then on to a master's degree in music and piano. I really thought I was going to go a music degree. And then God got hold of me. You see, the first little church building in about 1964, a little country church, called me out of college. I was just out of high school, going to a little Baptist college, and asked me to come as a minister of music. And I thought, how can I do this? And I never looked back. I've served the church and God's people all through these years and His kingdom. And then in 1966, there's a little heart there, and here's my sweetheart right down here. And I met Loretta at that little Baptist college. We married. And there, through some ensuing years, God gave us 3 more little sweethearts. Those are our sons, our 3 sons. And then there came a time that they married, and those other little balloon-looking hearts are we call them our daughters in love, our girls. One of those, you'll notice, flew away. And that was a great tragedy in our life, that one of our sons lost his wife. And I got a little bird up there and a little heart that's sailing off into the sunset. God called me after about 40 years or so in the ministry at different churches. My wife has often told people that she has a drug problem. I drug her all over the Western United States. We served about 5 churches. All of them seemed like they were 2,000 miles apart. All the way from Oklahoma to Oregon, from Texas to Oregon to Idaho to Montana. And so I spent those years. In 1994, we built our cabin. It's a lodge over here in the near Nye at Cathedral Mountain Ranch. And we invited people to stay there as a respite, as a retreat center. We have a guest book that's got more than 1,000 names in it of missionaries and pastors who just needed a place to rest and to worship and to be with God. And so that's not what our cabin looks like, but looks like the drawing of a 5-year-old. And yet I saw my grandson's, he's 7, and he drew some things the other day and can already draw much better than I can. The mountains there and the wonderful time that we've had for almost 23 years up on Cathedral Mountain Ranch. In 1998, you see a lightning strike there. We were called by my oldest son, who told us that he had MS. At this very moment this morning, he's suffering in great, 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 great pain. Great pain. And so any prayers that you could send up for our now 52-year-old son would be greatly appreciated. And that's a lightning strike out of a cloud. And then there's another lightning strike beside it. In 2007, we lost our grandson in a farming accident in eastern Montana. And that was a deep, deep, dark moment in our life. And that was one of those moments that you raise your hands and you say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And it seemed like in the next few years, you see a cemetery there. Loretta and I buried all 4 of our wonderful parents. It seemed like every couple of years we would lose a parent and make a trip to Texas and bury some more parents. And then At about 2017 is when I retired from the Montana Baptist Convention, and you see a bed there with lots of little Z's going up. We're in that blissful retirement. And then my wife wakes up like she did this morning and said, "Are we retired?" This was retirement, and so we're doing exactly what we want to be doing. And what a joy to get to just go and respond to God's people. And it's a joy for us. Now you have an Ebenezer before you. I did this little workshop one time, and I talked about, let's look at the good times and the bad times, because it was sometime in those bad times we did some of our greatest amount of learning. God was with us as much or more during the bad times. But bad times can also cause some people to become bitter. And they can think, no, there were times that God didn't bless me. He was not with me. He did not seem to care. And I've come to that point in my life that I have to raise up my Ebenezer and say, "Lord, this is my life. This is it. These are the best of times. These are the worst of times. This is what you've given me. This is the life you've given me." And had God not given you this life, and had He not brought you to this point today, then you'd have no Ebenezer to raise. And God has been faithful. Hitherto hath the Lord blessed you and kept you. We're here under His grace today. I want you to think about those difficult moments and release that unto the Lord. For being bitter at God this side of eternity is a futile exercise. Romans 8:18 says, "For I reckon that these current difficulties, these difficult trials, are not worthy to compare with the joy that is to come, with the glory that is to come." Oh, if you and I could know what is coming for us. Oh, if we could know already the explanations that God will give for those difficult times, where He did great work in our life, and He led us through that moment, and He led these Israelites through these defeats and these captivities and these great trials to bring them back to Himself. I have to say, in some of the darkest moments of my life is when I was closest to God. Not in the good times. In the difficult times. In the difficult times by a little grave is where my wife and I got on our knees and rededicated ourselves to God and to what we could do for the rest of our grandchildren. What kind of grandparents we'd be from then on. He brought us to a place of reckoning. "For I reckon that these present sufferings are not worthy to be compared to the glory that is to come." But I've done this in several places, and I ask everybody now, I want you to look and see if somewhere on your timeline is a little cross. A place where you met Christ. You'll be amazed that some people have filled out the entire timeline, but just sort of forgot that moment. That day that the great God of glory walked into their life. I don't care if you're 6 years old or 16 or 60. I don't see how you could forget that. I had one lady tell me, "Brother Mark," she said, I don't know if I can forget the, I don't know if I can recall the exact time. I said, "Well, I'm not sure that that's required of you. However, I would say you're going to have to be able to get pretty close. This is conversion. This is your turnabout experience. I can't imagine that you've come through your life and have not had a moment that you can say, I could nail something right there. I could stack up some stones right here at Mizpah, and say, right there is where God met me and washed me clean with the mighty power of forgiveness as I confessed my sins to Him. I was just a little 7-year-old boy. I'll never forget it. I can't forget it. It was just a Sunday night, and I walked out of the church, and I'd been baptized that same evening. I wanted to be baptized with some friends who had already gone forward that morning. And I'll never forget, the lilacs smelled so sweet. And the Texas night, the stars twinkled like diamonds in the middle of a city. I'll just never forget the peace that I had. The joy that filled my soul. And so if you didn't put a cross in there, you've got to understand that what has happened to the Ebenezer stone is this. He has become
Jesus Christ. Your great stone of help. He's the chief cornerstone. Now, therefore, we are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and the household of God, and are built upon the foundation of the apostles and the prophets, Jesus Christ himself being our chief cornerstone. That's an amazing thing that he became that rock for us. I love some of the great old hymns. How firm a foundation, ye saints of the Lord. A rock of ages cleft for me. Thou dost hide myself in thee. Peter, when he preached his great sermon after Pentecost, preached on the cornerstone. He says these words, I lay a stone in Zion, a chosen and precious cornerstone, and the one who trusts in him, in Christ, will never be ashamed. He was quoting Isaiah when he quoted that great, great psalm. My mother used to sing a wonderful old song. It goes like this. In times like these, you need a Savior. In times like these, you need an anchor. So be very sure. Be very sure that your anchor holds and grips the solid rock. This rock is Jesus. Yes, He's the one. This rock is Jesus, the only one. Be very sure. Be very sure that your anchor holds and grips the solid rock. The stone of our help is Christ. He who came to us when we had no help, when we were hopeless, when we had no future. He is our rock. Over and over, we are told of the chief cornerstone. In Isaiah 28:16, in Romans 9:33, in 1 Peter 2:4-8. In Psalm 118:22, Jesus even tells of himself, I am the stone that the builders rejected. I am the stone that the builders rejected. Have you tried building your life without a cornerstone? Don't be among those who rejected the stone of help. He's the Ebenezer of our lives. Is there a cross in your timeline? One of these days, it will be the only thing that matters in your life. You can take all of the rest of that, and in eternity, you can forget that. I can only imagine in my mind's eye that I'll walk into that birthing room of heaven where you arrive, however that is, and they announce, this is Mark Langley, a new citizen of heaven. As a little boy at the age of 8 years old, he gave his heart and life to Jesus Christ, asking for forgiveness of sins and claiming the righteousness of Christ. Welcome home. Welcome home. It'll be the only thing that matters in your life. All the bad things that you could even be bitter about will be gone. You'll understand better by and by about those. And the laudits and the rewards and the pleasures and the blessings and the benefits will matter none at all. The ground will be level at the foot of that cross, and the ground will be level in heaven, and you and I will be citizens of a better kingdom. All because at one point in your life, you met Christ. It's the only thing that matters. Now, I want us to sing a little song of commitment. It rededicates this life to the Lord and to His service on earth. And perhaps even in the singing of this song, you may want to just come up here and put your Ebenezer on this altar. The little song is, take my life. Use me, Lord. The good, the bad. God's going to use all those good things to help other people. Do you remember the story of Peter? He was sifted. And I was always a little amazed at that. I thought Jesus should just rescue poor Peter. They said, Peter, I'm praying for you. And after your test, and after your trial of fire, I want you to go strengthen your brothers. And it was not but a little later on that he told Peter, I'm going to build a church on you, on your confession, on your life. And Peter had his ups and downs. And yet his life he offered to the Lord. So I'm going to slip over to the piano. And we're going to sing this closing song, Take My Life, Use Me, Lord. And I want you to sing it with me. And let's stand as we sing and use this as our time of commitment today. I'm not playing, I promise. It's a miracle. Well, I actually know that piece and I thought I was playing it. Then we'll turn it on again, see if there's something wrong. This is actually me playing. There you go. Do you know this song? Did I get one that you know? If you don't know it, let me sing one verse to you. Take my life, use me, Lord. Take my life, use me, Lord. Make my life useful to Thee. Take my life, use me, Lord. Take my life, use me, Lord. Make my life useful to Thee. Now, He has made your life very unique because you're going to lead others to Christ through the uniqueness of your life. He intended for you to be unique. So sing this with me. Take my life, use me, Lord. Take my life, use me, Lord. Make my life useful to Thee. Take my life. Take my life, use me, Lord. Make my life useful to Thee. Take my life, teach me, Lord. Take my life, lead me, Lord. Make my life useful to Thee. Take my life, lead me, Lord. Take my life and lead me, Lord. Make my life useful to Thee. And take my life, teach me, Lord. Take my life, teach me, Lord. Make my life useful to Thee. Take my life, teach me, Lord. Take my life and teach me, Lord. Make my life useful to Thee. And here's your commitment. So here am I, send me, Lord. Here am I, send me, Lord. Make my life useful to Thee. Here am I. Lord, make my life useful to Thee. I don't know how much more life you have, and I don't know how much more life I have. At the age of 74, maybe I've lived mine up. I'm going to serve until the Lord tells me no more or gives me no more opportunity. But I pray that you'll just once again give your life over to the Lord today. All the good, all the bad, all the difficulties, all the blessings, and just give yourself over to Him. So I'm just going to play this and we're going to have a time of commitment, and maybe you can just come and lay your little card right up here on the altar. Symbolically saying, Lord, here's my life. Take me, use me with all the things that have happened and all the training and all of the education, and yet all of the difficulty and all of the pain, just take me and use me. Would you bow your head? Let me pray for you, and then some of you may want to do that. Lord, we just give ourselves all over to you again today to serve you. We're here, and we're here to, with beating hearts and breaths and abilities. I pray that you'd use this church to bring forth the kingdom of God in this community. There's so much ability here. And what a shame it would be to just stay in this upper room while there are neighbors that are lost and there are poor that need to be fed and that there are demolished lives all about us. So take us, Lord, and use our lives. So if you feel led, come and put your Ebenezer on the stage. Ebenezer. You see these lives before you, take them and use them. And use us up, Lord. Burn us out. For your kingdom and for your glory's sake, do we pledge our lives? For your use, you have prepared us. And we thank you for this time that we can once again remember all our benefits and lift our lives to you. Thank you. Be seated.